Okay. Alright, we are recording. Oh boy. Been a long time since I made a recording.
Why are you recording?
Because it's been a long time since I made a recording, that's why.
That doesn't even make sense.
We're on a trip to Lubbock to go to the Triple, and this is about the only chance I've gotten to do stuff. Let's see, what's going on in the big world? I think since last time I recorded, I think the Rays I haven't actually physically seen the rain, so I cannot say it's really happened yet. It is supposed to have happened, but yet it has not. Let's see. The guy I've been shadowing, it's our last week of doing shadowing. After that, I just kind of do whatever I do with the job that I've been given, which is kind of interesting, different. Going from being a systems administrator to programming. In PLSQL. Nice enough little language. And that's kind of exciting from a certain standpoint. But it's also, I consider it a ploy. It's a ploy to keep me in for task longer. I don't think it's actually going to end up working terribly well, but hey, you never know. Could be here for a terribly long time. Back the last time we were here, I always get these. I have no sense of time. Like, here's an example. When I worked for the prison in Santa Rosa, I felt like I worked there for years. And when I looked at it on a piece of paper, I only worked there for about 4 or 5 months. What qualifies as one of my shortest jobs. And, so, yeah. And let me tell you, time has passed by so fast here. You know, I'm getting older, so time passes faster. It doesn't seem like I've been here for very long, but it's already been, came in May, started in May, so this is December, and I've already, so it was May, June, July, August, September, October, November. I've already been at this job for 7 months. You know, everybody always says, oh, you need to stay at least for a few years, you know, so people don't think you're just serial hopping, and you go, what are you talking about? That's exactly what I'm doing. I don't mind people knowing that. It's true. It's honest. So. Anyway, I've been doing this for 7-8 months now, and it's flattering to a certain extent that they want me to hang around, and they know that it's a money issue ultimately, and they're trying to get me more money. Now, the sad state of affairs is that compared with where I am and where I need to be to accomplish the stuff of the patriarchal blessing, you know, it's going to need a lot more than what these guys are probably thinking. You know, they think, well, we gave them I think it ended up being an 8.5% or an 8% increase. Which is good, you know, not complaining at all.
Just,
you know, it just isn't gonna do the job long term. So, I'm not shy about saying that because, you know, I hate to surprise people, you know, and they say, what, you're leaving? Oh my God! You know, you don't want to surprise anybody. I think everybody knows. They said, well, yeah, he's kind of a short timer, but we're going to get what we can out of him. He's like, okay. He says, I'm perfectly willing to do all the work that needs to be done. Oh, one of my projects, which is the name servers, the big authoritative name servers, I did the first one within my first month of working at Eastern, and I'm just now, we're just doing the testing on, it's called NS2, and it's the secondary one, which was really what they were wanting to have happen in the first place. So everything's going quite good. I think I've pretty much done everything that they wanted me to do probably in the first couple of years in my first position, so I don't feel badly, you know. And I said, well, you know, they promoted me, so. So now I'm going to do, it's really good because it's kind of a database administrator with programming stuff on it. I think it's more programming than the DBA stuff, but I can claim both, and that will certainly get on the old resume when the time arrives. I think I'm getting shoved into this concept. It's called DevOps, and it's kind of a mix between a software developer and a systems admin, or they usually call that operations. So it's DevOps, and nobody's ever explained to me that way. I just happened to stumble upon the term. And it seems consistent with what I would like. It's kind of getting away from the compartmentalization, you know. There's usually the applications department and then the operations department, and they're really quite segregated. You usually have a completely different, you know, reporting chain, different boss, different everything. And this is kind of a hybrid job where they said, you know what, it really is useful to have one guy that does, that is decent in both roles. Actually, they said, you know what, they can actually get really quite good at both roles. And they usually have moved for smaller organizations. They can't really afford to have separate people to do that. They can only afford one guy, even if they need to pay him a little bit more. And that's kind of where it comes from, is that you hate to say it's higher, but you end up having to pay more for that kind of a person. Which works for me. In that you want to have enough money to comfortably take care of housing, utilities, and stuff like that. Well, we're struggling right now to kind of keep everything even. You know, we're meeting all the bills, we're paying everything, but there's nothing left to really, you know, there's nothing really left for a rainy day. Like I said, you know, we're one flat tire.
Oh, thank you.
Not even a big disaster away from being back underwater financially. We're kind of almost a small disaster away from it. Like I said, you know, if we pop a tire, that's something that's not in the budget, and we don't, you know, our buffer isn't quite there. So, we still need to investigate the whole saying, right now, the house we sold to Susan Carey, it was another finance deal, so they're paying us, payments on the loan. And we started to investigate. I know it's doable, it's just a question of how much of a bite is it going to take of selling that, I don't know what you want to call it, that mortgage to somebody else just to get the book to cash it so that you have the down payment for whatever house we're going to be getting next. I don't really know at what point that this house is really coming. Because I'm trying to play it loosey-goosey for the weekend. If we have to move around a little bit, we can do that renting. Because buying and selling houses is always tricky. House I buy is really the house that I just want to end up just, you know, retiring to, dying in perhaps, stuff like that. Of course, you know, the father's always got his own plans and it isn't necessarily revealed. I really don't think anything's going to happen in job-changing front until I get the master's down. But that's going to, people tell me it's going to be a couple more months. Which reminds me, this Tuesday after work, good job, I got to stay almost until midnight, working on doing the CIFSP. Certification test, which I'm really quite nervous about. The temperature is kind of fortuitous timing in that I'm doing some work for Heavenly Father, and I know He always appreciates that. And I'm seeking blessings that on this certification test. Which, when I've read some information about it, is absolutely the weirdest, strangest, 2 miles of breadth and a quarter of an inch thick certification test that it's just all over the map. And I've been, as part of my master's, they've got this kind of online training. I don't know how really useful it's going to be, but it's the online training to prepare you for the test. And I had just originally treated it like all the other certification tests I've ever taken. Now, you can try to take tests for stuff that I already know a lot about, and therefore I feel pretty confident that if it's based on just knowing what you're doing, that you're all right. I'll cram a little bit before. Like, I would, if it's going to be in Albuquerque, I'll go and I'll get a cheap motel room, and I'll overnight, and the night leading up to it, and the morning before, I'll just cram. Go in, and pass the test. And this one, everybody says it's not amenable to it. But yeah, but it's just too much breath if you don't have a lot of experience exposure to everything it covers, you're gone. It's like, oh no! So, I talked to my college mentor, Yolanda, yesterday, you know, it's our normal weekly call. We always make the call in to make sure I'm still on target. Never worry, because I'm always way, way ahead. And pressing forward, trying to cram two years of graduate level work into, well, so far it's only been 8 months. And I'm over halfway done. I'm very glad about, because every 6 months you have to pay $950,000 for the service that you're doing. I really don't want to have to pay again, so I really want to get it done before May. I'm hoping to get it done early in the spring. And, anyway, so, that's what's coming up on that front. And this is really the only certification test that goes with this degree. So, everybody says that once you get past this point, it's downhill flying. Just slide into home plate, you connect. And then once I have that master, then yes, the job hunting goes into high gear. Hopefully with a goal that come this summer, we will have moved on to the next place. But, you know, put your life into Heavenly Father's hands, you just never know what exactly is going to happen. But
that's good. Are you hot? I'm getting hot. Yeah. You can hear. Let's put it on this one. I think I can feel free to talk amongst you.
No, but for me, it doesn't matter. These recordings just record whatever is there.
In the van is Ken Haynes. I first met Ken in Tucum Carry, probably, golly, 15 years ago. I was just coming and he was just going. So we've been able to renew our friendship while we've been here. And of course the boys are here and everybody else is in the car. Everybody takes these trips to love it. They always want to stay and do a job and stuff like that. I guess I'm kind of sticking by the mud. I just go and get things done. Get out and get home. There's other things I gotta do. So yeah, that's the plan. Now you know, if I get done with my master's in January or February, which there's a possibility. There was some thought earlier on that I'd get it done before the first of the year, but that, yeah, I don't think that's really gonna happen. You know, we're already halfway through December. Of course, that was back in October when things, you know, things happened. Lisa's mom died, and then there's been a lot of extra stress that's been coming from the changes at work that affected me, and then frankly got a little sidetracked with some recruiters, you know, bugging me. Saying, oh, we've got this wonderful job, are you prepared to move to Indianapolis or Cleveland or Cincinnati or, you know, and it was like, well, hey, I got it, you know. I told myself a couple of years ago that I was going to be more take advantage of more opportunities and open myself up for them and pursue them too. And that's what kind of got us where we are now, is the fact that it was needed. There was some other circumstances that required that. You know, things were looking kind of iffy at New Mexico State University. seemed like things were changing to the point to where I was getting concerned that that they might choose to eliminate my job or probably worse than just eliminate my job, just cut my hours to the point where they didn't have to pay benefits, stuff like that. And that's why it was always really important, you know, when it started smelling like that and things started happening and I got moved from being a professional to being an hourly person, when they said, and you'll never get overtime, and it's like, okay, how am I supposed to accomplish my job when, you know, I do it during weird hours and most days, you know, I work 10 or 11 or 12 hours and then make up for it at some point in the future, you know. That's my point. And the airbag just kind of shrugged and said, this is what we have to do, it's regulatory. I said, okay. And, you know, I said, boy, I need to make sure I get my next, my last evaluation, which was excellent. I always want to hand that out, and I know that I'm weird for doing that because nobody does that. I don't know if that makes people think weird thoughts or whatever, or just, you shouldn't tell people your evaluation. That's revealing way too much. You go, well, the circumstances were that my job title was changed so that it looked like a demotion. It did, you know, when you go from being a professional to an hourly person, it says, you know, I asked people, and they said, sounds like a demotion to me. And you go, oh no, I can't let that change, ever. Because, you know, that's a death knell. That means you'll never get a decent job again. If they start finding out, well, you didn't do very well. They were demoting you. And they go, okay, here's my last evaluation. It's sterling. It was wonderful. Maybe sound like I was some kind of techno god or something. You know, that's really awesome. So I passed, you know. If people, if, you know, any opportunity where they say, do you want to upload a few things that you think would be good for consideration? I do. And I throw up my evaluation. I evaluate really good. Everybody likes to have me around. I do good things. Everybody likes me. And my work. So, yeah. And so that had a lot to do with why. Why this came about. People say, what are you doing for cash? And you go, it's a long story, but yeah, it was kind of necessary. Speaking today was kind of closing out as a possibility. You know, I could have taken the telecommuting job, things like that, and you know, in retrospect, maybe I should have done that, I don't know. But, honestly, I think this situation has gone really quite well. And I'm certainly getting professional experience that I would have been hard-pressed to get anyplace else. I don't think anybody else would have taken their Linux system admin and said, we're gonna give you a programming job 8 months into your employment with us, and you're going, I don't think I could have hoped for that. It opens up a whole new range of stuff for me, so that's a good thing. I certainly don't want to leave Eastern too quickly, because, you know, I don't want to be ungrateful. I want to make sure that they get good value for having given me, you know, that little extra that I probably wouldn't have gotten anyplace else. And yeah, the whole DevOps thing, which kind of works into my thing. I like working for smaller organizations. I've always liked being the one-man kind of IT shop, and I think this kind of leads into that even more strongly than I did before. And, you know, it's a great thing. You know, I always
networking side. Versus, you know, so, and that's what I'm getting my master's in, is in network management. But the master's actually, honestly, what was really the thing that necessitated the master's degree is New Zealand. I've always wanted to get back to international work. I really enjoyed it when I was younger, and I used to go offshore. It was hard on the family, and so this time I really kind of wanted to take them with me where I work international. And I was looking at how one gets visas, you know, to work in other countries. The kind of place where we wanted to go, just listen back to any of the other recording, it goes long, torturous road of us figuring out different climates that we thought might be amenable to us. Things like that. At least doesn't like it too hot, doesn't like it too cold, she doesn't like it hot and humid. Well, let me tell you, if she just asked about three quarters of the universe with that, actually about 9/10 compared to the South Island of New Zealand, Tasmania, the Falkland Islands, Ireland, Scotland, which the whole thing about going up off through the Hebrides and then jumped right over Orkney. I don't know why we jumped over Orkney, we just did. And then the whole Shetland thing, which I'm still working on a Shetland project. And all that had to do with climate. And certainly in those places, church is very strong, and that was another thing that we were wanting to do. We wanted to be in a circumstance where we were needed, you know. We've lived in bigger wars. Service was one of them. Where they didn't really need you. And it was more like, you know, we'll make you, you know, junior assistant, primary substitute chorister. You go, man, that means that you've got a mega word, and you really don't, you know, you're just making up calling now. And you've got those circumstances, you know, and when I listen to Utah, and Utah's chock full of that kind of stuff, you know, from just being, we've got more people than we have need of them. And I think the church is getting cognizant of that, and they tend to make smaller wards now. Oops, boy, I just hit by stumbling. Great stumbling. So they wanted to go to places where, you know, smaller branches, a little more stretched out, a little younger in the church perhaps, or just, you know, not churches there very much, and they need faith, you know? So, that was another one of our criteria. And, we just, and so yeah, just places like that. Back when I was working at New Mexico State, I had copious amounts of free time. Spend whatever I want, waiting for problems to pop up. I'm kind of a system admin, great, all of the blessing and curse. It's kind of a blessing over there a little bit, in that I have plenty of time to do research. I did lots of research on these different places, how long it needs to be. The residency requirements, stuff like that.
Scotland, sadly, which includes Shetland, which was the first big push that we ever made to get offshore. That one fell apart on the thing that Great Britain is really clamping down on immigration generally. And so I was going to go over as a student. I didn't really know exactly how that was going to come together. And it fell apart. I mean, right up to the very end, everybody was so optimistic and it was going to come together. And we were going to get the money needed. I was going to get the part-time job. And we were just going to kind of pull it together. I was going to get my master's there. And Orkney and Shetland study, not on island study, which I thought was much better, much more expansive, and really up my line. Anyway, so, and let me tell you, within like 2 weeks of, we're just waiting, I mean, I was poised at the keyboard to get some airplane tickets. Already bought the bag for pretty much taking what stuff we were going to take, and everything else was just going to either disappear or go into storage. And it fell apart. They said, well, you are not going to get a visa for this because we're not giving out visas for students very readily anymore. So that's where that was. And especially what you think, well, you can take this study course and study online, and you go, come on, guys. You know, and I had an argument with the officials. We had a discussion with the officials, and I said, you know, this is, this is, ethnography. And it said, it means you have to be present, you have to be an observer, you have to, sometimes you have to be a participant. Because you can't do that from 3,000 miles away. I know you can, you know, you can technically read the books and take the tests and listen to the lectures online, but it's nothing like actually being present. Because I'm not going to be able to pull together the kind of research that needs to be done for a proper master's if you're 3,000 miles away and you really don't have any contact with people except by email and Skype and stuff like that. Because it's just not useful. And I still figured it out. I was like, okay, fine. Sorry, okay, it's not going to happen. Can't do it. Because I've got a certain thing about it. Well, okay, so we did all that. But there's still a thing back there that says, you know, we had prayed and pondered and worked on that. We really felt like that was the direction to go into. Been a sideline. So when people go, oh, you're going to be a pronounced, you're going to, you know how it is. Once you get here, you know, things just kind of fall apart and you end up staying. You go, really not part of my larger plan at all. Or not a part of either what I felt like was we were inspired to start trying to. And that's why Shetland is still part of this master's, even though if the master's about network management, it's mostly about managing like that one. And that was where the whole Shetlandic.info website came from, which I have rebuilt. That happened this week. I got that pulled back together again, and it's running. I haven't gotten the other stuff going. Frankly, right now, I've been working so hard I've been trying to stuff my brain full of information for this certification test. I've really only been able to devote little chunks of my lunch hour to working on Shetlandic.info. But hopefully after this test is done, this test will help me pass. Then probably over this over the Christmas break here, I'm also going to take a Christmas break from school. I'm going to actually get a little bit of work done on Shetlandic.info so I can say, you know, we're actually making progress. It's going pretty good. There's no.
Christians is right behind us.
Go with us to the temple.
They drive faster than that. No,
that's not them, is it? Maybe it is.
I can't tell.
Yeah.
I thought they were ahead of us. They're behind us?
Yeah. That works, sir?
I don't know.
I thought it was them. Anyway,
10 times.
So hopefully during this Christmas break we'll work on Scutlandic.info, because I really do, every single month, I send out a monthly test report to the interest group, which is some people that at first I just collected from my contact from trying to get to going study there, that kind of morphed into the interest group in Scutlandic.info. And a few of them have expressed some real interest. I've gotten some feedback. Most of them are just silent people that really have not said, you know, for all I know, they reported me as spam and they're blocking me. You know, it's like, well, you can just tell me you don't want to be on this group, and I won't update you. Maybe I should put that in the next little report. Every month I send out a email report. It goes to the Facebook page for the project, and what else do I really have? That's really all I have going on right now. And of course the server at Eastern, who's been so wonderful to put all this stuff up and to let me have a server space and a server, and bandwidth is the big one. So I really do want to get that thing up and running before I leave Eastern. Yeah, otherwise, I don't really ever get to really take advantage of that bandwidth. I want people to actually be able to upload artifacts to us. You know, the whole thing is about stories and it's all audio recording. You know, it was just like, I guess I was kind of inspired by all the recordings that I have made in the past. Each time I would travel in the car for work, which I did tons of while I worked for New Mexico State, you know, talk radio got boring, listening to music is always boring. It's good for little snippets, but let me tell you, if you've got a 3-hour drive ahead of you, listening to music just doesn't cut it. And you get tired of talk radio, so you're always blathering on about the same thing. And I said, you know, I can make recordings of my own, you know? Kind of like a journal a little bit. Which we're supposed to, and I don't really take a lot of time just to sit down and write out things like that. Anyway. So, that's what kind of gave me the idea of, you know, we need to get stories and recollections of people, and the neat thing about Scotland is they've got such interesting dialects, and there's been some efforts in the past, and you know, it's a small-time operation. The people who are trying to preserve the Scotland dialect, and I decided that it would be best to kind of partner with them, and they have said they love the partnership, and the guy who runs the Island Studies and the Nordic Studies program, Stefan Todd, he wants to partner. I really do want to start to show them what's possible here in the way of, you know, a custom website, and it kind of fits in interestingly with the job that I just got at Eastern, the promotion I got. You know, it was always a little bit off the page a little bit to be programming a website when I really was not a website programmer. Well, now I officially am a website programmer. So it's really quite interesting how the Lord keeps kind of poking in and tweaking things a little bit. And all these things tend to kind of come together and coalesce. and I find it quite interesting. And so, you know, I'm still working on, I hate to call it a side project. I really always consider what I do for work, what I do for money, as just being the day job, and that what I hope to be really a little bit more passionate about is that being the, you know, what I spend the bulk of my time not doing outside of making money. So we're working on that, all that fun stuff. I'm wanting to do some stuff over the Christmas break to have something to give in the report for Setlandic.info. To get that, you know, of giving people the impression that I was going to kind of have to pull back while I really concentrated hard on the master. Of course, at the very end of my master's program, in fact, I'm only about three classes away from being there. There's a capstone activity. There's something you're supposed to do that's supposed to kind of utilize what you learned during the master's program. And you know, I'm trying to, my thought has always been, well, you know, it kind of came together, really, the whole Shetlandic.info project was really a melding of my capstone activity that I knew was coming, and my Shetland anthropological stuff. I really did want to meld my technology side with my more ethnographic things that I wanted to do. So I can't say that I was trying to twist my capstone activity to work in this particular thing. It was actually integral in the original development of it. You know, you have to take opportunity where opportunity presents itself to try to forward what you're trying to do. Frankly, to try to mix the day job with what I started calling the life work stuff. I've never been a guy that considered working on computers or stuff like that as my life's work. I always just considered it the day job. So that's what we're doing. So hopefully, here towards the end of December, I'm going to be able to make some better progress on Shetlandic.info during this break from school. I think it's actually going to end up being a break from school. You know, sometimes it ends up being called in, something broke, can you help us fix it, yada yada yada, and that's fine. But, you know, to be able to spend the bulk of my time working on something, you know. So going back to PicoLisp, I'm learning a new programming language all along the line. I was doing this before I got this job. I find it interesting that now it's just a little more aligned to the job. Use PicoLisp to make the website very, very custom. To bring in these recordings. You know what else I find interesting? They just introduced something from FamilySearch, you know, the church's
family history website. It's called Vineyard, and it seems like it. You know how I've said sometimes that I swore general authorities and stuff like that were listening to my recordings, because I would talk about something on my recordings, and all of a sudden there would be like 70s talking about that kind of stuff in conference, or you would hear stuff and you'd go, I was talking about that. Well, this is another one of those occasions where it's like, man, that's my project, and the church just kind of said, ooh, that sounds good, we're going to do that. And basically what it is, now I don't know much about Vineyard, because I really haven't, I can go around this fella. Okay. It isn't necessarily just stories and recordings. I think it's also pictures and things like that. They're trying to get a lot of that, what I would consider to be anecdotal information, you know, that's connected to family history. You know, give us a story about your grandmother. Record your grandmother's voice so that these people seem more real to you. That they aren't just some name on some genealogy sheet. They're actually real people that had lives. And as much as you can get from them. And I think that's what the church is kind of doing. It's scary from the standpoint of it's going to be a huge storage job. The church can't pour money into this huge data center. Store all this stuff, because this isn't little stuff. This stuff takes up a lot of storage. Unless you compress it really good, and I'm sure the church, that's one of the first things they would do. They would get down and say, oh yeah, we're going to compress this stuff, but it's going to cost us down there. We're having a big auction. The auction bar, you know, every Saturday, they all come and sell their calves, buy calves, whatever. Anyway. And that's funny, because I've been trying to pull that together, but it was specific to Chetland, and trying to preserve in some form, on some level, with Chetlandic culture, you know. I'm going to partner with the museum there, and there's beginnings of doing that. I think a lot of those guys are waiting for something to actually come, you know, happen to see. We want to see a product. And it's like, okay, well then now it's time to start to pull together the product and how we're going to do this. So, anyway. I hope to get a little bit further down that road in, here over the kitchen break. So we have something more to report. Every single month I like to have in that company report something that's actually making progress on, as opposed to just marking the time, which I was afraid I was going to have to do in December. In November, it was the creation of the Facebook page, which has brought up in two more people to the interest group. You have to understand, Shetland has a population of 22,000 people, maybe 23,000. Instead of islands, way out in the ocean, and you have to understand that with that small of a population, you're going to be dealing with an incredibly small group that's even interested in what's going on, or even express passing interest. I mean, if it ends up being a group of 30 or 40 people that are actually even involved in it, I'll consider it a massive success. are, number one, you know, there's the staple, the collection ready access. I wrote it out, it's beautiful. It's basically recording and the recording people's Shetland recollections, Shetland stories, you know, anything that a Shetlander wants to record, and it needs to be voiced, you know, I've been really thinking about things, not for music. There's other places where you can throw out there music if you like, you know, I wasn't going to do that because I was afraid that it would lose its character in just kind of becoming a Shetland-based, you know, music journalist. Not anything, you know, I don't consider that particularly cultural. You have to really have to be careful about not losing that character, not having it turn into some kind of marketing arm for, you know, Shetland music festival. You know, if there's authentic music about Shetland, about the Shetland experience, performed by Shetlanders, might be a space for that. But I'd rather do that someplace else or another server, another website. You know, I'm not trying to poo poo the idea. I'm just saying I don't want that to happen here. Anyway, sorry. So, yeah. People's recollections in dialect, so it's really important. You know, it's going to concentrate more on older Shetlanders to make sure that, you know, these are things that you want to preserve the most. Not that we're going to downplay, you know, we also want recordings from kids, from young adults, from young anything, because it's so much about the way Shetland is. You want stories about kids struggling with the whole thing. Do I stay in Shetland and try to figure out how to make a living and how to stay an Islander? Or do I heed the siren's call of going to bigger places, to Aberdeen or to Edinburgh or to London or someplace on the continent? Because, you know, I want to do something else, you know, I want to become somebody. Yeah. That's where the geodesic goes. Sort of. And yeah, they built that a while back. I don't know what they do there. They got all the signs out, but they do it with all kinds of really exotic chemicals. Fly goes with a bunch of pumps down there to get the stuff out of the ground.
Well?
No, I doubt they just put that in for oil. They would do something like that for, I don't know, helium? Something. But yeah, these are always warning signs.
They still do.
About all the different things that they have to have there.
Probably those toxic waste stuff, I don't know.
But the basic focus, the basic thing that says, does it accept this recording or not, is that it's spoken, so that kind of cuts off music, so I don't really want music. If somebody wants to read poetry, as long as they read it in dialect, you know, that's great. I want to be stuff that they wrote. I don't want it to be like, you know, it's the poetry of Mahatma Gandhi, and you go, what is, you know, I know Gandhi's a really great guy and all, but, you know, he's not a Shetlander. I'd rather have Shetland poetry being read by somebody doing it with a Shetland dialect. So that's what we want to get most of all. And then we have translations of it. Or at least this is my original idea. It may not work out that way particularly. But I was hoping to bring in these partners to say, we want to render the Shetland dialect into written form. And there's some guy back in the 40s and the 50s that lived pretty much as a scholarly pursuit worked out the whole thing. He pretty much codified the Shetland dialect so that it could be written and standardized to a good degree. So that's what you want to do. First, we want to take these things in dialect. And of course, we do want to get and do metadata based on where exactly it is, because there's not one Shetland dialect. There are several, you know.
Each individual place has a little bit different dialect. They say it a little differently. Sometimes it's even a little harder to understand than others, you know.
People from Lerwick, it sounds much more like standard English. The further out you get, the more interesting. You know, whether it comes from Fair Isle or Fetlar, I love the name, you know. Or Ent, or that one over there. I forget. I used to have the geography down a little bit better than I do. Anyway, all these different places, so you would actually have the metadata. It's all Shetland, but it would all be broken down by different things. And there's also another aspect of this. There's been some creaking. Scotland is going to have a referendum this coming year on becoming independent from the United Kingdom. You know, still a realm of the Queen, but not administered, not administered out of Westminster, which is where the UK government got Holyrood in Edinburgh. And so this has come up, and there's been a lot of, you know, questioning about what the status of the Shetland Islands should be. Whether the Shetland Islands should have their own referendum to say, we want to remain with the UK, we want to become part of the new independent Scotland, or do we want to assert really old, ancient, and somewhat, some people consider it spurious, some don't. You know, I'm not here to bicker about that particularly. But there's been some ideas about whether Shetland should become a crown dependency, a crown colony perhaps. And, you know, almost take a little more control of its own affairs. It certainly has the resources to do so. Shetland would become an oil-rich country. And money is not a problem in this particular instance. Now, whether they feel like they're capable of managing it is anybody's guess. Anyway, so, and this whole thing about the Shetlandic culture almost kind of feeds into that. We are distinct people, the people of Shetland. You know, distinct people need their own place. You know, they need autonomy, they need sovereignty over their lives, not always to be controlled by some larger group or from some administrative center very far away, and very far away from their concerns. And that Shetlandic.info could not to all of a sudden become some kind of bastion of Shetland independence, which isn't what anybody's really calling for. They know they would have to remain somewhat dependent on something, but to have a little more autonomy, I think, is what they're hoping for, or what the people that are pushing for it, I think, are looking at as a possibility. Anyway, so that could feed into that whole idea about, you know, Shetland is not Scotland, although it's been administratively in the hands of Scotland since like 1707, or even before that. I think it was the 1600s. But before that, it was a dependency of Norway. And, yeah, anyway, so it becomes, all these things kind of become that. My, once I was starting to work out and thinking about it, I came at it from kind of the family standpoint. When I was working here at Eastern, like 12 or 13 years ago, with the child care technical and training and technical assistance program, I did a lot of training. One of them was on family culture, because I am a believer in the fact that I think culture is really more family based than it is a geographic thing to a large extent. We have much closer ties to our individual families than we do as place, because we've just become so mobile over time. When you say you are a Shetlander, it begs the whole question of how long have you been on Shetland? How many generations has your family, you know, been Shetland? Are those people more Shetlandic than you are? You know, how do you feel about people who have just immigrated to Shetland? Are they Shetlanders too? At what point do they become a Shetlander? You know, all these kind of things, all these questions that can come up around a location and identifying yourself by a location. And that my whole thing was, this has much more to do about family. We feel a connection to place or time or to people, mostly because that was born and bred by your family. You know, where are your parents from? Where are your grandparents? What kind of allegiances do those people have? How do they talk? How do they speak? Where'd you spend your summer? You know, things like that. And so, when it came to these recordings being kept on a big web server and being able to be accessed, it was, you know, it was really with that in mind. My picture was, I want young people to go and make recordings with their grandparents, their great-grandparents, and their parents, and to talk about, you know, themselves. So much of Shetland, you know, and this has to do with tourism boards and stuff like that. Shetland really ends up being, if anybody knows about them at all, they know about Shetland sheep dogs. You know about Shetland ponies, you know. If they're a little more big on it, they know about Shetland sheep. They might go there to go and look at the interesting bird life that is many, many seabirds that make Shetland home. Some of them are unique to Shetland. And all of those things tend to kind of get sucked into, you know, it ends up being the tourist brochure. And all that stuff has been hashed over a million times. And never wanted Shetlandic.info to be another rehash of the tourist guide. This was supposed to be about the people and their uniqueness and what makes them special, and that as we live in an increasingly mobile world where every population, and the United States is an example of being almost a cultureless place, because so many people come here, and you can talk to kind of neoconservative what do they call them? So the guys at the borders with the rifles that are trying to keep Mexican brown skin whores from overrunning the border, you know, trying to preserve our precious American whatever, and you go, Americans don't have a culture. Not specifically American, you know, because there's, you know, every big town has their sections. They've got Chinatown, they've got a, you know, a Vietnamese section in Southern California. My whole entire town that I grew up in Southern California is now just called, it's a derogatory term called Smithville for the Vietnamese. Because they all came in and they all bought up houses and they've got a large community in Garden Grove, California. And the fact that, you know, and not to say anything bad about that, you know, it's just what happened. You know, America's a melting pot, and the thing is, well, the thing is things get melt. It's more like Morgan Stew. The whole mishmash of everything, and hopefully it tastes good at the end of the day. You know, when people say, well, you gotta come here and you gotta learn the language, and you go, well, in our part of the United States, boy, it really helps to learn Spanish. Most of the jobs I see posted in this part of the world, they said, you know, there's a preference for bilingual people, and you're going, sounds like if you're gonna move to eastern New Mexico or southern New Mexico, or New Mexico period, it really behooves you to try to at least pick up a decent amount of Spanish. Or else, you know, the people who do have it are going to be ahead of you in line. And you go, so, it's just not to say that, you know, like I said, not that bad. It's just that if you come and you say there's some American culture and you try to spell out exactly what that is, you're going to be hard-pressed. Because there really is one. There are thousands, and that's where the family culture came out, the whole concept of it. And that's what I'm trying to kind of check in on this Jetland project, is say that this is really about family, and that we want this multi-generational, this intergenerational activities going on. We want kids to interview their grandparents. We want that to happen. They're going to ask questions that their grandparents answer on a recording that are really quite relevant. Why did you stay in Scotland? Why are you here? What did you do? What did you spend your time doing as a child? How much different is it than what I do? You know? What kind of advice would you want to give me as a Scotland, as a kid in Scotland? Should I leave? Should I stay? Should I, you know, what's here for me? And these are interesting questions, perceptions, and attitudes that you don't often find anyplace else. Because islands are really small and isolated. It's hard to get off of them. It's hard to get to them. And they appeal to different kinds of people. And from an anthropological standpoint, we want to correct that interesting difference. That's one of the hallmarks of anthropology. You don't want to just study every man. That's not interesting. You know, yeah. You want to study unique people, and that really the last unique people that we have are those who are kind of isolated from everybody else, mostly by circumstance. Islands are perfect that way. That's where you're going to find the most interesting stories, the most interesting outlooks, the things that, heck, if you wanted to get right to it, that sell stories in, like, National Geographic magazine. Things like that. Things that people just go, wow, interesting people. Find them in the depths of Africa. You can find them sometimes in little hidden pockets of Asia or South America, perhaps. But then you don't see any face up because you've all become homogenized. And you go, you know, we want to honor and to preserve, and not just to preserve, we don't want to make a living museum. That's horrible. Nobody wants to do that. This is what we want to do is help these places retain their individuality, their uniqueness into the future. Shetland's an interesting circumstance where that could happen because of this oil that they found. You know, is the place going to continue on? Yeah. Is it going to depopulate? It's actually stabilized, which is good. It might even grow, which is very different. And the whole point is, what form is it going to take? Is it going to change so much that when people say, what was Shetland like in the 1800s? They'll go, I don't know. I have nothing to do with that. I'm an engineer. I was born in London. And I got a job to come here to Shetland to do, you know, geoengineering for petroleum. And you go, you know, and what place do you have in Shetland? Do you have a place? Do you consider yourself in Shetland? I don't know. Anyway, people don't stay and keep living there for the birds, or for the sheep particularly, or for the ponies, or any of that stuff. Although all those things are there, I'd say the majority of the population doesn't stay there for those reasons. They have other reasons. And we want to try to access that, and to collect that, and to gain a better understanding of that from an anthropological standpoint. When I first came up with this, it was I was still wanting to work on a PhD in anthropology, and I still do on a certain level. I don't know if that's actually going to come about. It might come about through papers. There's actually a process now in the UK to get a PhD through just scholarly work as opposed to the traditional, you know, classwork, dissertation route. You usually have to write a whole lot more. But I thought it would be, you know, I said it provides a framework for the next 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years of my life. To say, you know, this is this is what I'm going to be doing, and that ends up being a life work. Where, yeah, I you know, I fix computers for Eastern and Western University. That's just a job. Not to denigrate people that just work at one job and work it and do a good job and get to retirement and earn their retirement and get that, you know, that's a wonderful way to live a life too. I'm hoping for something else. Anyway, so that's what I hope to do for the next couple of days. Next few weeks, once I get done with this crazy certification, which just needs to be gotten out of the way. You know, and that's really how I feel about the master's degree too. It's just something that needs to get done to get out of the way. Oh, that which brings up the whole thing about the New Zealand gag there. Getting a master's in technology, which I am in the midst of, more than halfway done doing, was really just an exercise to get a credential that would help me earn a visa. Usually something akin to a green card. Almost every single country is desperate for technological people, most countries say, we want you to have a bachelor's degree in a skill field that we don't have enough of. And almost no country has enough, even the United States. I know that kind of makes people feel, well, we generate most of them. You know, no, actually we don't. India does. But
always looking for talent and having the justification that says you have the talent that we need.
And the basic one is that a bachelor's degree, in my case, in information technology, comes back to that. So it was always, well, should I just get a bachelor's degree in information technology and along with my degree that I already have in home ec? And I actually did the research probably about 3 years ago on that one, and it was a question of how could I get it with the least amount of money, effort, and time put into it. And I looked around at bachelor's programs, and all of them basically wanted me to redo my first 4 years of college. That was going to take a long time, take too long, and be obnoxious, you know, and it was just going to be a bachelor's, another bachelor's degree in something. You go, you know, I said, I already had a bachelor's degree. Then I started looking at master's programs, and I didn't know if I dared be that cocky almost to think that I could get a graduate degree in something. And it came down to it. So the first time I looked at it about 3 years ago was through Western Governors University, which is where I'm going to do my graduate work now. It was for a security, a master's in information technology security. And I've never been interested in security. I worked for Los Alamos, and I just developed kind of a bad taste for getting anal about security. That's exactly what you need to be. Start a certain kind of person that really just kind of, no, you can't have that, no, it's my job to stop you. I've always been more of a, no, I want stuff out there, information is free, and that kind of a guy. I even got so far as to, you need to have a certification in Security Plus from Top CIA. I already have 3 Top CIA certifications, and I need to get Security Plus. I already bought the book and started looking at it, and as I did, I just didn't feel like that was the direction to go in. So I put it aside and didn't really think about it again. Then last year, when things started kind of crushing together, and I was saying, I've got to get out of this job before it ruins my reputation and makes it so I can't get work that's any good, before it drags me down. I need to start working on my next project. I'd already got my Linux certification in the midst of all this, which was really quite off of the beaten path. We were working on Shetland go to school in Shetland. I was going to get out of here for the most part. And I was also working on Plan B, which was going to Alaska and doing stuff in Alaska. We were, you know, Lisa was kind of excited about the Alaska possibility. And in the midst of that, I just got a wild hair. Inspiration, perhaps, that go and get your Linux certification. You can probably do it. Because there were the pay for Linux system admin compared to Windows system admin are about 2-1. You make about twice as much. And I like to work better. It's more server-based as opposed to workstation-based. I just like that separation from just you know, here's how you stick a mask, here's how you turn on a computer, you know, those kinds of things. You know, I've done that for 8 years, and I was ready for a change. And I went and got this Linux certificate. Well, and that was great because I actually went to this job. I got this job because of the Linux certification that I got last year. So I started looking at all that, and then once things kind of started hit the fan, probably about this time last year, it started kind of coming together, and it was like, something needs to change, something needs to happen, we need to, you know, I've got to make a change. And it came to me in the spring. I remember that I was in Las Cruces, and I looked up Western Governors again, and lo and behold, I had a second IT mask, which was network management. Not so security minded, although I'm taking a security certification right now, which frankly, I think points me in a direction I really don't want to go, but it gets me the mask. And I decided to go ahead and get this IT network management mask. And this puts me head and shoulders above all the rest of the people that, you know, that just have a bachelor's degree in something like this. I'm all of a sudden going to end up being their boss. Not that I care about that. I've always preferred being a highly skilled, you know, trench warrior rather than somebody who, oh, I'm sorry, spends the bulk of their time throwing out timesheets and approving this, signing off on that, going to meetings. That's just not. I'd rather be doing the work, not supervising the people that do the work. I don't want to be people supervising particularly. My supervisory style is very much, you know, team oriented, where I'm just a lead analyst. Whereas if you gave the magic for too long, you end up being the guy that says yes, no, this and that. Not that it doesn't require your intelligence, I just don't want to do that. I've always been kind of a blue-collar type of man. Anyway, so, you know, getting this master's had a distinct purpose, and the funny thing was, it was so that I could get a, so that I would have an easier time getting a visa to go to New Zealand. I could have done it with a bachelor's degree, but it just ended up being that the bachelor's degree seemed like it was redoing a lot of stuff over again, where getting a master's meant that, you know, I leapfrogged over all that. Am I going to get considered beyond the bachelor's degree too? Yes! And also the fact that it gets you so much closer to a PhD and whatever. It's really interesting. A lot of PhDs don't really have a weird thing about what you have your master's in. Especially if your master's thesis, mine's called a capstone master's, but it serves the same purpose. Especially if their thesis has just an inroad into what you're doing in a PhD. In fact, your PhD tends to be an expansion or the culmination of what your master's thesis was. It kind of goes along the lines of, in your thesis, you create your, if you're referring to like scientific terms, you create your hypothesis and your thesis, and in your doctoral dissertation run-up, it's mostly doing all the research, doing all the actual work of figuring out if that hypothesis is valid. Now, it doesn't have to end up being valid. What is important is the effort you put into making that assertion and figuring out whether, you know, how many angels dance on the head of a pit. That whole philosophical conversation can be a master's thesis, actually doing the research to find out how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. That is a dissertation, and that's doubtful. And so this thing works fine, even though I say, well, he's kind of a technical guy, we're kind of confused. And you go, yeah, but look at what his technical work led to, it's leading to anthropology. And they go, well, this is totally different, but okay, it works. That's all I need to hear from somebody. Somebody willing to say, you know what, that works. Or they say, look at all these scholarly papers he's done on, you know, Shetland anthropology. We're going to give him a PhD based on research paperwork for anthropology. Shetland. Wow. He goes, yeah, I think a strange root trip. I always think it's strange. That's difficult. That's part of the whole thing, but that's what makes it interesting. If a PhD that you're getting is some 25-year-old that has never had a real-life life experience because they spent their whole time 22 to college, and they worked steadily straight through, and now they have a PhD, says, would you rather have that PhD? Or would you rather have one that has seen some life? You know, difficult to really look up to a, let's say that you're going to college and you have a professor. Difficult to look up to a professor 5 years older than you are. And you probably have if not more life experience than they do, and yet they are up there, you know, being some kind of expert. If they are an expert, it's on something that's really small, because in that amount of time, you can't become an expert on anything big. People prefer having a professor that's old and grizzled, and when they come in, they tell stories about the interesting places they've been, the people they've seen, the interesting experiences they have, and what they've learned from it. Sometimes outside of the realm on which they actually officially got their PhD. Because a professor doesn't even get interesting until they've been a professor for a decade or so and got on some sabbaticals and done some interesting things. That's when it really starts getting interesting. Before then, you know, after I've just been doing my dissertation work for the last 30 years. That's all. And they'll say, now I find out PhD. Well, he's a brand new member of the faculty, brand new, newly admitted PhD. And you go, yeah, but he's already 10 times more experienced, 10 times smarter than most people in our department. Will he be the department head in 2 years? Probably. That's our happiness. But just gotta say, you know, had experience in things that college simply doesn't and can't do for you without you getting out, getting your hands dirty for a while. Anyway, so I don't know where this is leading. I don't profess to say, oh, I'm going to be a professor someday. Let me tell you, all of the scuttlebutt around academia is that the traditional college model is going to shrink up quite a bit, and that you're going to have far more PhDs than are ever necessary, and if your joy is to just, you know, go to college and just teach a standard class or something and have people call you doctor, because you're in trouble. You know, we've got far too many of those people. Because what they're looking for are those kinds of people that are published a lot and that attract students a lot. And and are you know, absolute gods in their field. That's, you know, having a PhD is gonna be like having a bachelor's degree, good enough. For just being, yeah, so what? You know? Every job we announce, we have 20,000 candidates. We have 20,000 PhDs to apply. You know, what makes you special? Why should we hire you? Well, I'm a PhD. You know, everybody else. So anyway. And I've always been the kind of guy that gets all my experience and all my understanding and all that stuff first, and then finally gets around to getting the credentials. So people say, how are you going so fast to your master's? You go, because I'm just rehashing stuff, and I'm just taking experience that I've had and shoving it in. So I'm not really opening the book particularly. There are assignments, there are things to do. I'm just doing the assignments. I'm not sitting here reading books and trying to understand. I did some of that at the beginning, but as time went on, I started figuring out that was pretty much a waste of time for getting the master's. And that mostly this master's that I'm getting is not for the acquisition of the subject material. It's not for the knowledge. It is simply to certify my level. And I hope that I'm at that level, you know, and from what it looks like, everybody says you're doing great, and we all perceive that you're going to be fine because you're at that level. You go, that's fantastic, thank you. Well, you know, I hope out of my 7 projects, ultimately, that I will get the stuff that just puts me at the level of a PhD. When the people say, you know, he's been doing this for a long time, I'd love to make this. I want to go this way. I need money to do that. Right now, there's just not money on any level to do that. And, you know, there it is. So yeah, when people go, well, you just seem to be chasing money, and you go, money for a higher purpose, not just to have a bigger car, not just to have, you know, gold plated rims, not just to have a big house with lots of land, you know, go to offers or something, whatever wealthy people have to do. No, it's for a higher purpose. And all these things that I do that could either be construed as, well, he's just going for the money. It's just those things are ancillary to what's trying to happen. What we're trying to accomplish. These things take money, therefore I just have to make more money. You know, well, you're just trying to get wealthy, you know, you're just going after the job strictly for the money, and you go, well, to be honest, I am going for jobs most of the time for the money, because I need the money to accomplish this. This won't get accomplished without money. Whether it comes from a foundation, whether it comes from a grant, whether it comes from, you know, my own work and just saving up money to get it done, that's how these things get accomplished. But I also know that in order to get grants and foundations and stuff like that to get behind these things, you have to have some credentials. They've got to have a reasonable expectation that you're going to be able to deliver on what you say. And a lot of Shetlandic.info is doing that, is to say, I don't just dream. It's not just a dream thing, it's a production thing. going to be a conference, and, you know, sooner better than later, you know? And there's some urgency to it. Every day, people are dying. Every day, people that could have been recorded don't get recorded because there's just not, you know, there's just not the infrastructure to make that useful, to make people get excited about. It's a little hard to get excited about until people say, I'm contributing to something, there's a community around it. It's cool and it's neat and we want to be a part of it. That's what takes it from being just something, some idea in the mind of one guy and expressed to a small group of maybe 15, 20 people into something that maybe even a few hundred people will get inspired by and say, you know what, that's, wow, I want to be a part of that. You know, it's fantastic. Come on, let's go. So. I guess I'm rehashing a lot of old territory. I'm sorry, I guess I just get into that being what recording, since I don't record very often, I forget what got recorded before. It's been probably about a month. And that's where it all leads to when people say, well, what are you here for? And I don't know, you know. I can't seem to condense that down to something that is interesting to people. You know, they want an elevator pitch. You know, you got 30 seconds. Tell me on your life. So I don't think you're some kind of crackpot. And you go, nope. I said, I'll tell you what. Let's just make it easy. You can just consider me a crackpot. Simpler. The people I'm trying to impress, I don't know if they really include you. You know, not being rude to humanity. But, you know, a lot of those kinds of things are just kind of inexplicable. I don't think my wife has any real access to that stuff. You know, to it. In most fashion, I would have to say, she's probably just kind of along for the ride. I don't think she has much help in any of it, but I do. So people say, well, that doesn't sound like it, you know. If you explain the whole thing to them, then they get a serious look on your face, and you go, but you're spending so much money on something that isn't going to produce a lot of money. You go, welcome to this world. I said, everybody misconstrues the whole thing. Because they go, well, this is a guy that he just seemed to be kind of a social climber, you know? Everybody got the idea that he wanted to be the CIO of our company. And you go, I have no intention or even interest in thinking I'm going to do this. I don't want to spend my time worried about who's attacking my network. It's just not, you know, it's just not how I want to spend the best years of my life. I'd rather spend it doing something that I think is really quite important. I mean, you know, what's important to other people is important to them, and that's great. I want to do something important. That doesn't make a lot of sense. I think my mom gets it to a certain extent. I don't think my dad gets it at all. My dad's whole thing, you know, and I love my dad, is about about the money, you know. He did what he did because it made money. And he got to take advantage of a lot of circumstances to make more money. That's what he did. And I can't say that he was, I don't think my father's ever rich. But he did well. And, you know, he worked for it. I'm not saying he got it for nothing, you know. In any kind of a morality book, I think he did fine. So you go, but yeah, as for doing something higher or doing something, you know, doing something that nobody else is willing to put in the time and effort toward or stuff like that, he's not your man. He just won't do it. It would be about, well, how much money am I going to make? You know, and you go, well, there's really no money in it. And it's like, well, you know what? I'm just not really in it. Gotta have a money component. And you go, now, do I think I'll be okay? Do I think I'm going to come out of this with having a good income and being comfortable and having the means to do, you know, to, what was my patriarchal blessing today? You know, that's where it all comes back. To participate in the work of the Lord, and you go, yeah. This is now, I'm not going to wait until I have those means to participate in the work of the Lord. I'm, you know, I'm going to continue to, you know, I'm going to do this big stuff even when nobody's asking me to do it. Certainly nobody's paying me to do it. You know, I'm doing it on the side. You know, there's the day job and then there's the life work. I'm hoping that this is the life work and I have to proceed as if it is. Do I need to make more money than I do now? Yes. That's all there is to it. So, yeah. People might get the impression, oh, he's just trying to maximize his, you know, he's not loyal to a company and stuff. I said, no, I'm not. But you have to understand, it's not what I'm after. But what I need to do requires money. Since I've got to make that money. Gotta come from somewhere. I can, you know, pray every night and clench my little hands together and beg God that he'll shower down thousands of dollars on me. And perhaps he will, but I think it's much more likely that it'll help me to get a better paying job. That seems more likely to me. Whoa!
Because they get pretty good to actually stop at the light.
I'm not explaining to them the big picture. I'm explaining to them the little immediate thing when they say, well, what job are you hoping to get after this one? And you go, it really doesn't matter. Because what matters is, does it pay more than the present one does? That's what day jobs are. They are a certain amount of time translated into money. And the more money I can translate that time into, the more I can spend my spare time away from work. It was a shame that the job I had didn't make me a requisite amount of money that could have made this stuff possible. Because honestly, it was fantastic to just be, I got paid to sit and wait for phone calls to come in. And after I get a little thing here with my application development, which is going to give me time to work on my program, which is what the next step kind of requires. It's not a bad skill to have from any standpoint. The bad part of that is there's always more programming to do. You know, it isn't like being a systems administrator where it's like you're just waiting for a call to come in. So I don't have as much spare time as I used to have. And I think it took me those 8 years to figure out that I could put my spare time to better use. And I did to a certain extent. But I got better at it. Well, let me tell you right now, I don't have much spare time left. We're just cranking away at the current project, which actually is on the money generation side. He says, what does that have to do with what you're ultimately trying to do? And you go, it is to make more money so that money can be used. It's a shame that you have to spend time doing that, but you do. I mean, it's just life. You know, even if I was already a college professor, already had a PhD, already had all of this, and I was working for like a university, and a large segment of my time would be chewed up teaching classes on subjects for which I might have very little interest in myself, advising students who are trying to get a bachelor's degree so that they can, you know, become whatever. And that it would also be, in the cracks, I would be doing the larger project, although it might be not so much as out of space. From the standpoint of, oh, well, of course he's doing that, that's what his PhD is in. You know, that makes sense. But right now, it's like, this doesn't make any sense at all. Why is a computer guy working on anthropological projects? And not as I just take care of the computers for the anthropological. You go, no, he's actually the guy leading it. You go, what? Doesn't make any sense. We're supposed to try to support people. They don't do they don't do what's going on. They just support what's going on. Yeah. Is it? Well, you're a kind soul, let me know that. Back there it was 70 and I wasn't doing 70. You should have been yelling at me then. I'm confused. You're telling me to slow down when we're in a rush? Is that what you're saying? So I'm surrounded by a wife and children who are nitpicky little picture people. I love them to death, but when you explain the big picture to them, their eyes glaze over. And that's it. What do you do? They aren't going to start without us. We got two-thirds the priesthood and most of the youth. Trust me, everything's fine. I don't even know who else is here. I guess other people are coming from Mule Shoe or whatever. Because there's only three, but I only counted three, four priesthoods counting in. Three, Mike, four. Still needed three more, didn't we?
I'm not supposed to go on track.
Okay, I think I'm safe. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I guess I'm done with the recording. We're doing good that way. Oops, no time now. Gotta drive. It's funny though, because I often... envy people who... have simple lives, you know, because just as likely to get to bless the kingdom, you know, all the blessings are just as available to them as they are to me. You know, what I am doing, I don't think earns me any brownie points on any level whatsoever. You know, it's just kind of a weird obsession to a large extent, and. If I was interested in watching television or I don't know, playing computer games all the time or something like that, you know? I don't denigrate those people and say, well, I'm better than you are. It's like, are you insane? I think you guys are infinitely smarter than I am. You figured out that there's no, you know, there's no great benefit to killing yourself doing things that 25, 30 people will even be interested in, much less thank you for, much less, you know, whatever. Something so esoteric that it's like, you know, I've never even heard of a place called Shetland. You know, I know. Nobody has. It's okay. I'll show it to you on a map someday. If you're even interested, and I know you're probably not. You know, it's like, well, I got video games to get back to, or television to watch. There's television show for Shetland, and you go, well, there's one that's kind of about it a little bit. Oh, I'll watch that. So, okay, there you go. Now you can learn about Shetland. Now, I don't know how inspirational it is to anybody. It's just what I... Try now to get up to the celestial kingdom, I hope. Working out, Father, and the Lord will say, what? I don't even get what you were up to. It's like, great, you don't get respect anywhere. I'm sure he won't. I'm sure he'll say, wow, now that's some interesting stuff. Okay, let's see. Got a stop sign here. Maybe I'll have a chance to close this thing.